enemy by proxy. Don't care, he's still family.
She shrugged before raising her voice again.
Can't punt that bitch, Uncle Naggy! For fuck's sake, will you at least keep it down? It's not like he can hear our telepathic link in the first place. Yeesh, what a buzzkill. Boss, can you just screw the bitch already so she mellows out?
Oh yeah, I did say I'd motivate her, didn't I? Foxy recalled. I guess I'm not doing much else at the moment, so I might as well get it over with.
Several tentacles sprouted from the Sandman's back and coiled around the surprised Zira. The appendages were as thick as arms and covered in random bumps and ridges. With little warning and absolutely zero foreplay, her ass, cunt, and throat were all invaded by a tentacle each, stretching her out to the point where even the succubus's pliant flesh was in danger of ripping apart. They started pumping in and out of her like pistons, while numerous smaller tendrils held her down and grinded her face and exposed nipples against the coarse roof. It was a truly barbaric act that was closer to torture than any form of sex. If the succubus actually had things like a womb or intestines, they would have been instantly turned to mush. It was a thought that filled Zira with an odd sense of regret, though it certainly didn't stop her from loving every single moment of the act. Especially the way Boxy's tentacles took bites out of her to snack on while watching the fight.
Boss! Boss! Here it comes! It's the Heaven and Hell Splitter!
Who, the what now?
Boxy shifted its attention back to Nagnamor just in time to see the Archfiend unleash what was apparently his signature move. It was a massive downward swing of his glaive that split Leosolra's avatar clean in half. The weapon's flaming shockwave carved a 60-meter-long lava-spewing fissure through the city and parted the stormy clouds overhead. Even if it sounded a bit pretentious and over-the-top at first, Boxy reluctantly agreed that Heaven and Hell Splitter was a truly fitting name. And judging from how it took Leosolra a while to glue the two halves back together, the power behind it was every bit as impressive as it looked.
That attack is way too strong! What's with that unfair power?
The doppelganger protested.
Come to think of it, doesn't the wind-up motion look strangely familiar? Wait, is that what he tried to use on me when we first met?
Probably,
Cora shrugged.
It's Uncle Naggy's signature move, after all.
It was the single most terrifying attack the shapeshifter had ever witnessed. If its past self had taken that attack head-on, then it would have been annihilated so completely that not even dust would have been left behind. The loophole it had stumbled upon allowed it to somehow avoid getting injured, but scary things were, in fact, scary. As such, the whole affair had ended up as yet another of Boxy's unforgettable near-death experiences.
That's a bit too much effort to kill a level 30-something mimic, isn't it?
The monster complained.
I'm not saying I expected Punchy to pull his punches. But even demons have to exercise restraint to a certain degree, right?
Restraint? What's the point in that?
Cora was thoroughly confused.
If you see a pathetic weakling walking around, it's only natural to instantly wipe them out using 100% of your power. Like my dad says, there's no kill like overkill. Know what I mean, boss?
Sure, whatever.
Boxy could have argued that needlessly wasting one's stamina could prove to be a fatal weakness, but gave up when it remembered who it was talking to. This overkill mentality was yet another in a long list of quirks that could be collectively summed up as just fiend things.
Then I guess I should be glad Snack worked out as Punchy's sacrifice back then.
Of course, that was hardly the only case when the succubus had proven herself incredibly useful. The mimic of the past would have surely died on multiple occasions without Snack's assistance. The more Boxy thought about it, the more it realized it owed much of its early success and its ongoing survival to none other than Snack.
Huh! Still think she'd qualify as a pure maiden?
Cora completely derailed its silent introspective.
Honestly, I have no idea how the crap that ritual even worked in the first place. I mean, just look at her.
Look at what? Holy fuck! When did this happen?
The fiend was so engrossed by what was going on out in front that she somehow completely failed to realize the scene unfolding behind her.
Damn, boss! You're really letting her have it!
Said boss didn't respond, however, as it was currently burning the sight of Frosty's headlock on Punchy into its memory, letting its numerous appendages ravage Zira's body on autopilot. This was a bizarre side of Korra's master that the fiend could never truly get used to, no matter how much she thought she understood the creature. All that potential for lewdness, perversion, and all-around carnal depravity wasted on a creature with absolutely no sex drive. Even though the shapeshifter brought the succubus to orgasm after orgasm, it regarded the whole affair with indifference and dispassion. It was the sort of attitude one might have towards a bothersome chore like doing the dishes. A fact that helped said dishes get off even harder, just as it had expected. Korra did her best to ignore the shameless slut as well as her own raging erection, focusing her attention back to the calamitous clash that was steadily destroying the city's northwestern quarter. The fight of the century was much more important than some pervert's exhibition show, so she continued mentally cheering for her archfiend uncle with great gusto. Once that epic fight concluded, she'd probably be told to continue smashing humans into a pulp like she'd been doing for the past few hours. She was also given permission to leave one or two of them alive so she could sodomize them to her metaphorical heart's content. She'd wrap the day's festivities up by giving all of the freshly motivated succubuses' orifices a very thorough inspection later that night. Korra didn't know what part of the day's proceedings to be the most excited about, so she threw all four of her arms into the air and gazed up at the stormy sky with actual tears of joy streaming down her cheeks.
Best day ever!
Zira very much agreed with that sentiment, albeit not in as many words. Part 4. The remains of a Republic platoon were currently holed up in a small, dark, and dank basement. The 22 Legionnaires and 9 conscripted adventurers making up the unit stood in relative silence, either seated atop old barrels and crates or leaning against the wall. They were hardly optimal resting positions, but it was either that or the underground chamber's cold and muddy floor. The only source of light in the room was an illusory globe of light that hovered just under the low ceiling. With nearly nothing to reflect it, the dull yellow luminescence did little to dispel the dark atmosphere. Under such conditions, it was no surprise that none of these men and women wore a smile, though the depressing environment was the least of their worries. They were stuck hiding in a corner like a bunch of rats right in the middle of a war zone with an unconscious VIP in their care. To make matters worse, their commanding officer had run off somewhere, and their comm crystal was as functional as a fork with no prongs.
Come on, you piece of junk! Work!
Not that it stopped the elf called Syme from trying to activate it. As the recently appointed second in command, the warrior was responsible for communications with Republic headquarters. He needed to report the unit's status as well as their location, but couldn't get through no matter how many times he tried. Under the circumstances, it was no surprise that his patience was at an end.
Give it a rest, Syme,
an elf woman groaned.
I already told you that banging that thing against the wall isn't going to solve anything.
Someone had to stop him before he broke the comm cube, and Kalira the warlock saw fit to do it herself.
No, it'll work, he insisted. There, I think it connected.
One could hardly blame the man for that surge of optimism, seeing as how his repeated attempts at percussive maintenance seemed to elicit something from the faintly glowing cube. This reaction came in the form of a grating white noise, somewhere between a scrawl and a screech. The magic item attempted to construct a holographic image of the other party, but the result was a garbled mess of blue lines and shapes that didn't look like a person. The cube suddenly went completely inert, even going so far as to lose its pale blue glow and turn a dull, lifeless gray.
Oh, shit. Did it just break?
Syme gave the thing a few worried taps and was instantly relieved to see it regain its soft luminescence.
Will you stop messing with that thing already?
Shout whispered Kalira.
You're going to break it for real.
Well, what else am I supposed to do?
Oh, I don't know.
She rolled her eyes.
How about you just sit there and wait like the deck told you to?
Indeed, their orders had been quite clear. They were to remain in cover until further notice. But not knowing what exactly was going on up there was incredibly stressful. Their unease only grew since there wasn't anyone around to give them orders. Their comm crystal couldn't connect to Primus Underwood. Decanus Morgana had run off to assist the Sandman with some urgent plan, and Hilda was still in a comatose state. Of those three, the most pressing concern was the second one, the Deck herself.
"I really shouldn't have left her alone with that guy," complained one of the adventurers. "He's super creepy. And shady. No offense, Mikey, but you're a conscripted human rogue," spat out one of the legionnaires. "That doesn't make you entirely reputable either."
"Wow. Okay. Wait. Is that why you put off on healing me when I got caught up in that explosion earlier?"
"Your bumbling set off one of our own landmines. You're lucky you got off with just a scratch."
"A scratch? My femoral artery was severed. I would have bled out on the spot if you put off treating it any longer than you did. You almost let me die."
"Maybe I should have."
"All right, that's enough, both of you,"
Syme shouted. The two men kept glaring at each other in quiet anger, neither particularly willing to admit fault. This sort of interpersonal friction was one of the main problems with forcing adventurers and soldiers to work together. Their differing perspectives and personalities inevitably led to small conflicts of opinion, which had a bad habit of exploding into ugly disputes when tensions ran high. The warrior named Syme understood this very well, being the most seasoned grunt in the group. That was precisely why the Decanus gave him the difficult task of keeping this unit from collapsing from within during her absence, and he wasn't about to let her down. First, Syme reprimanded the elven priest.
"So what if Mikey misjudged the explosive radius of a device he'd only been told about yesterday? He took a gamble setting it off remotely, and it paid off. Blasted that imp wizard right out of the air, he did."
Then he turned towards the human rogue.
"And is it really such a big problem that Holt was too busy keeping the others alive to heal you on the spot? Your life is hardly the only one in danger out here. If anything, you should be thanking him he managed to patch us up as well as he did."
Finally, he addressed both of them at once, as well as the rest of the room.
"Do you want the deck to come back and find us pointlessly arguing over things we can't change? None of us are here because we particularly want to, but we're all in this together. So, either get your shit straight, or we're all going home in urns."
The intervention seemed successful, as neither Mikey, Holt, nor anyone else could argue with the veteran's scathing words.
I'm sorry I held a grudge over that,"
the rogue spoke in a quiet voice.
You're right. It was my own fault I got blown up, and I owe you for stitching my ass back together."
"Don't mention it,"
the elf grumbled.
"And I'm sorry for calling you a two-time and short ear behind your back. You've shown you deserve better than that."
"Thanks, Holt. That means a lot to me.
From now on, I'll only say it to your face."
The 30 or so troops shared a short bout of laughter at Mikey's expense. The volatile situation seemingly disarmed, Syme sat back down on the wooden bucket he was using as a stool and continued fiddling with the comm crystal.
"It won't work, Syme,"
Clara repeated herself yet again.
"It's gonna take a lot more than a little speech to get a signal past the demonic overlord."
"Yeah, I get that. The big scary burning bloke's bungling all the long-range magic. But how do we know he's still up there?"
A distant tremor knocked a small cloud of dust from the wooden boards overhead and caused the various tools and crates in the basement to rattle ominously. The warlock shot the warrior a, need I say more, look, to which he replied by rolling his eyes in a, okay, fine, sort of way, and finally gave up on the comm crystal.
"How do you stop one of these demonic overlords anyway?" Mikey asked.
"You don't,"
replied Clara.
"You run and hide until they run out of juice and disappear."
"Then what in the blazes is the Sandman planning to do? And why did he need the Deck's help to do it?"
"Why are you asking me?"
"Because you're a warlock, If anyone knows how to stop a big angry demon, it'll be you.
It's not my specialty, okay?
She snapped back.
My skills are focused on conjuration and magical bombardment. I don't do demons like that Sandman bloke, so give me a break.
Sorry. It's just... I can't trust that guy at all. Caught a glimpse of him before the battle started, right? Instantly gave me the heebie-jeebies.
So what now?
She asked with a raise of an eyebrow.
You know, heebie-jeebies. Mikey tried to explain himself. Makes your skin crawl and your hair stand on end. Stuff like that.
I think that's the whole point of his getup, a conscripted ranger chimed in. The sunshine and flowers look really doesn't fit the whole reclusive demon master thing he has going.
That seems rather detrimental, though, doesn't it?
One of the soldiers argued.
Can't really trust the guy if he looks like he eats babies for lunch.
Maybe, but being recognizable is important for adventurers. And mercenaries, by extension. All the top guys have their own signature look, their personal brand. Really gives their name and reputation more weight, which leads to more work. Know what I mean?
I get that, right? But who'd knowingly hire someone that blatantly evil?
The Republic government, apparently.
The irrelevant conversation was abruptly interrupted by yet another quake.
So, Syme, are you sure you don't want me to go out there and find the deck?
You really should give it up, Mikey,
the warrior declined.
The deck's a lot more capable than she looks, yeah? If she thought she could handle whatever's going on out there, then all we have to do is trust her judgment.
Besides, what would you do even if you found her?
Asked someone else in a teasing manner.
I'd get her back down here where it's safe and sound.
What if she doesn't want to come back?
Then I'd drag her along even if she's kicking and screaming.
No offense, you're two timing short here, said Holt. But something tells me you'd get your eyes clawed out if you tried that.
That's only if you're lucky,
claimed someone else.
The deck pulled a knife on the last guy that tried to get too grabby with her back at the fort.
Oh, come on. That's just a rumor, right? There's no way a sweet girl like her would do something like that.
Uh-huh. Need I remind you how that sweet girl took out that imp priest outside the old barber's shop?
The image of Kira using a power shot to drill a hole through the groin of an Imperial soldier, or imp for short, flashed through the men's minds. They weren't going to complain about her eliminating the enemy healer, but her methods and the smirk on her face were both a bit... unsettling. Not to mention that, while noteworthy, it had hardly been her first nut shot of the day. Nor her last.
Okay, yeah, I think I see your point, admitted Mikey. That habit of hers makes her seem a lot less cute.
Three guesses who she picked it up from.
The men in the group threw Fizzy a sideways glance. The golem was currently performing basic maintenance on her equipment, but stopped when she felt their gazes and looked up at them with a confused expression.
What?
She glanced around at them.
What? Is there something on my face?
The lads are just uneasy how you always seem to go for the dick,
clarified Kalira.
Oh. Well, it's hardly my fault you male meatbags have a universal easy-to-reach weak point like that.
Came a groan from the corner.
Always go for the cock.
See? Hilda gets it!
Fizzy declared triumphantly before resuming her tinkering. The dwarven berserker's delirious sleep talk was hardly a reliable source of information. The last time the group heard her voice, she muttered something about those tricksy pink leprechauns. Nobody present knew who or what a leprechaun was supposed to be, but they somehow doubted it was supposed to be pink. Still, the fact that she showed brain activity was a sign she'd probably get better, at least in terms of physical health. Whether she would be any more or less insane when she woke up was entirely up to chance.
Why are you so insistent about going after the deck anyway?
Asked someone in the group.
Are you sweet on her or something?
Might be. A little bit,
Mikey admitted.
I was just thinking. Wouldn't mind running off with her somewhere. Settle down, have some fuzzy-eared kids, you know?
Ha! Not if I get her first.
Really, Barry? Aren't you already married with 2 sons?
Asked the man sitting next to him.
So? Who says I can't have myself more than 1 wife?
Oh, I don't know. How about the law? Or society in general? Not to mention common sense and moral decency.
Come off it, Carl. Look me in the eye and tell me you haven't thought about having those dusky thighs wrapped round your head.
What? Of course I haven't. Well, not until just now, I mean.
Not too bad a thought, is it?
Not the worst thing ever, no.
Gotta admit, I wouldn't mind that either.
A third man weighed in.
I wonder what the deck will think if she knew you boys were admiring her thighs so much.
The guy's smiles turned to grimaces so quickly that one would think the female warlock had dumped icy water on them.
Yeah, way to be a buzzkill, Kalira.
Guys, dusky thighs aside, Mikey spoke up again. Aren't those tremors getting louder?
Come to think of it, they kind of are, admitted Syme.
Not louder, closer.
Fizzy's correction caused a heavy silence to grip the room. It was disturbed only by the soft clatter of the golem packing up her field repair kit and strapping her electric charge pack to her back. A few moments later, the group heard a muffled, otherworldly roar followed by yet another earth-shaking impact. It was another in a series of reminders that the giant fire demon of murder death was, indeed, still up there. A loud knock on the basement's slanted double doors sent the entire unit on high alert, prompting them to quickly rise to their feet and ready their weapons and magic. The only exit to the chamber opened with an audible creak, allowing some sparse daylight to fall down the steep staircase and brighten up the dungeon-like atmosphere.
It's Kira. Stand down,
came an all-too-familiar voice. The catgirl in question carefully descended the dangerously narrow steps with her arms in the air. Her unit first saw her mud-stained combat boots, then her pale leather trousers, and the mithril rapier hanging from her waist. This was followed by a quilted jacket in the gray and black colors of the Republic flag draped over a chainmail shirt. However, it wasn't until they saw her tanned face, golden eyes, and fiery crimson hair that they finally felt relief wash over them. A few exclamations of
"Dick!"
and
"Ma'am!"
rose up from the troops as they formed a semicircle around her.
All right, calm down, you lot,
she ordered while doing a quick head count.
Syme, anything happen while I was absent?
The elf threw a sideways glance towards Holt and Mikey before answering.
No, ma'am. Nothing at all. The VIP's still out of it. We're all present and accounted for, and ready to move out at your leisure, ma'am.
Any word from headquarters?
No, ma'am. Comcrystal can't get through to them.
Magical interference from the Overlord, ma'am,
added Kalira.
Bollocks.
Kira grimaced.
Right then. In that case, gather your gear and your courage. We're evacuating this place and seeking shelter elsewhere.
We're going to ignore the Primus's orders to stay put.
Situation's changed, Holt. Those overlords have been steadily making their way towards us for the last several minutes. A mere basement won't be enough to save us if we get caught up in their wake. Yes, Holt, what is it?
The priest, having been given permission to speak, sheepishly put his hand down.
Did you just say overlords? As in, more than one?
Oh, yeah, about that. Long story short, Mr. S returned the Empire's favor and called out another one to distract the first. So, there's 2 of them now.
The news washed over the ignorant squad, and they had no idea what to make of it. To most of them, something like demonic overlords were things they had only heard about in passing, if at all. Their inability to determine whether the Sandman's stratagem had made things better or worse was plainly visible on their faces, prompting Kira to clarify the situation.
Bottom line is, Mr. S's plan worked, and the two of them are too busy fighting each other to bother with the likes of us. Yeah. We better hurry.
Oh my god, they're here.
Those reassuring words prompted a small round of cheers, which was cut short by yet another earth-rattling aftershock.
But we're not out of it yet,
shouted Kira.
They're wrecking everything in their path, so we need to move before they get here and we get caught up in it.
Decanis, ma'am?
What is it, Mikey?
You said they're headed towards us?
Yeah, the big white one is slowly being overpowered by the big scary one, who seems to be making his way in this general direction.
Okay, but why this way specifically?
Morning, Warg!
A thunderous bellow poured in from the outside.
I haven't the slightest idea.
Fizzy obviously didn't buy the barefaced lie. She had no idea when, why, or how Boxy managed to piss off, of all things, a demonic overlord, and still lived to tell the tale. But she couldn't bring it up within earshot of the others. She momentarily felt envious of those three demons' telepathic communication with their master, and she too yearned for an extremely convenient way to talk to her goddess's chosen hero. Unfortunately for Fizzy, it was a link she'd never be able to have due to her species. Golems were notoriously immune to any and all magic that affected the mind, whether detrimental or beneficial. Therefore, the most she could do at the moment was keep quiet and assume that something utterly nonsensical happened between Boxy and that mega-demon sometime in the past.
It doesn't matter,
Kira declared.
Whatever the cause, this location is right in their path, so pull your pants up and get those butts moving. Now!
Yes, ma'am!
As if struck by lightning, the troops immediately formed a line and followed their Decanis out of the basement with Hilda in tow. The dwarf's adamantite armor, however, had to be left behind. It made her much heavier, to the point it took three of the group's strongest members to get her into the basement in the first place. They've since had time to strip her, wrap her in blankets, and fasten her to a makeshift stretcher, so going up the steps was considerably easier than the way down. A few of them couldn't help but want to bring her gear along separately, but Kira ordered them to leave it. Even if it was powerful and expensive equipment, it was much too cumbersome to lug it around and would slow them down. It was thus left behind out of concern for their safety. Not because a greedy monster in disguise wanted to come back for it later and add it to its collection. Once outside and back into the street, the troops were greeted with a somewhat surreal sight. To begin with, the thick storm clouds overhead now had numerous gaps and clear patches. They couldn't even imagine how those unnatural formations occurred, though at the very least the rain had stopped falling. Looking out over the low rooftops to the north, they could clearly see the two overlords going at it. One was a winged, fire-wreathed demon straight out of a nightmare, while the other was a half-human, half-spider thing that was almost too white to look at. A gigantic pillar of ice suddenly rose from the ground between them like a geyser, hitting the winged demon in the chin. The proxy uppercut sent shards of ice and plumes of flames flying out in every direction, knocking the blazing, skull-headed demon down on his ass with a massive crash.
You can do it, Uncle! Just hit her right in the pussy!
The boisterously vulgar female voice coming from one of the nearby rooftops once again set the troop on their guard. At least until they realized that it belonged to a certain four-armed, red-skinned demon who was technically on their side. They were formally introduced to Cora, Zira, and Drea when they set out on the mission to entrap the enemy VIP, so they already knew she was one of the Sandman's familiars. However, the details regarding her supposed uncle, why she bothered cheering at all, or whether the overlords actually had genitals would have to remain a mystery for the moment.
Excuse me, Miss Arms,
yelled Kira.
Huh?
The fiend looked down at the catgirl with a vicious sneer. Her glare alone caused a few of the more skittish conscripts to audibly swallow.
We're ready to leave now.
Oh, man. And it was just getting really good, too. Fuck.
Cora leapt down to the ground without trying to hide her disappointment.
Yo!
She greeted the gathered soldiers with a wave of her left hands.
Boss ordered us to babysit you lot, so you'd better be grateful.
What's going on here, Deck?
Asked Syme. And what does she mean by us?
Mr. S was badly injured by the summoning ritual and can't escort us personally, so he lent us two of his familiars for our own protection in his stead. However, I would appreciate it if Miss Snack could stop playing games and take this matter seriously. Oh, but I am taking it seriously, honey.
Kalira smirked arrogantly.
Wait, what am I doing over there?
Asked the other Kalira. She was hardly the only one caught unaware, as all the soldiers unwittingly took a few steps away from the intruder in their midst. Giggled the imposter in a smug tone.
You half-wits didn't even notice when an extra person snuck into your group. You mortals are way too easy. Miss Snack, stop unnerving my men,
said Kira with a tired expression.
They're on edge enough as it is. I'll have you know I'm merely masking my presence in case an enemy finds us. That way I might be able to catch them by surprise. I'm not using this form just to screw with people, you silly kitty. Uh-huh. But you're still doing this mostly to mess with them, aren't you?
The succubus didn't answer with words, but merely stuck her tongue out through her smiling lips in a teasing manner.
Look, just quit it, okay? Mr. S said you have to listen to everything I say, didn't he?
The disguised demoness's playful attitude quickly disappeared along with her mischievous smile.
Okay, fine,
she said in a cold voice.
Have it your way.
In the next instant, her facial features started changing while her Republic magic user's uniform filled out in all the right spots. She transformed into a shape that looked more like a human version of her true self rather than the green-haired witch she copied to pull off her prank. Kalira was visibly relieved, although she also felt a certain amount of envy, seeing her flat, almost non-existent chest swell out to a pair of massive mammaries in a matter of seconds. Did not help her self-esteem in the slightest. The men in the group watched that particular part of the transformation with great interest as well, albeit for completely different reasons.
Better?
Asked the succubus in her own voice.
Much,
confirmed Kira with a nod.
Now, let's get out of the Overlord's range, and quickly. This is still a war zone, so mind your corners and watch your flanks.
Yes, ma'am,
replied the troops in unison. As they began making their way through the ruined city, they quickly realized what the Decanus meant by getting out of range, as the collateral damage caused by the two overlords was far-reaching indeed. Their calamitous clashes sent ice shards, ripped-up trees, half-molten rocks, and bits of buildings flying for almost 200 meters in every direction. Thankfully, none of them landed anywhere near the unit as they were skulking from building to building. But having such massive pieces of debris flying overhead was not exactly a calming factor. Neither was the devious succubus in their midst, but the knowledge that their Decanus had a firm grasp on her leash somewhat eased them. On the other hand, Cora's assistance was much better received. After all, if a fiend was going to attack someone, they would smash them in the face immediately rather than stabbing them in the back. Plus, having someone as plainly powerful as her on their side was extremely reassuring. Seeing her plow through blocked streets and collapsed houses made her physical strength abundantly clear, even if she was hardly what one would call subtle. She was a bit distracted, seeing as she kept stealing glances at the ongoing Overlord fight in the background, but she was hardly the only one in the group to do so. Whether it be curiosity, wariness, or fear, all of the soldiers and adventurers gawked at the spectacular fight every now and then. And by the looks of things, the epic brawl was about to reach its climax. Nagnamor let out a booming scream. At some point, Leosolra managed to rip off or destroy the skull-adorned cuisses that protected her opponent's legs, allowing the arachnid half of her avatar to stick its mandibles deep into his hairy thigh. The upper half turned into a sort of amorphous blob that was wrapped around his arms and weapon, restraining their movements while snuffing out his protective flames.
Ha ha!
She laughed mockingly.
I've, got you now, loser!
In the next instant, the Archfiend felt Leosolra's fangs drain much of the magic permeating his body. His strength rapidly fading, Nagnamor could not break out of her hold. It wouldn't be long before his body gave out and he was sent back to the beyond, given the rate at which that glutton was practically drinking him up from the inside. The match was over, no matter how one looked at it. All things considered, Nagnamor still ended up having a lot of fun throwing down against an opponent of near equal power. Even if Leosolra only fought by proxy, she was still a worthy challenge.
Ah, that's the stuff.
She cooed in delight.
You, like, taste so good that I literally cannot even.
However, there was no way Nagnamor would allow himself to suffer defeat gracefully. All fiends were sore losers by default, and being an archfiend and an overlord on top of that meant he was the sorest loser of them all. And the one person, the one thing he didn't want to lose to at any cost, was that insufferable little bug. Therefore, he decided that if he was going to go down, he would do so with a bang.
You want my mana so bad?
He bellowed with a seething rage.
Fine then! Take it! Take it all!
Wait, what are you-
Libero Vasilisis Ligula! In elementum pulvinami tincidunt vestibulum!
Nagnamor suddenly began chanting, his unwords causing the very world to tremble and quake. Seemingly realizing what was going on, Leosolra redoubled her efforts to finish him off as fast as she could. She slashed him with frozen blades and ran him through with icicles the size of towers, but the Archfiend's vitality was unmatched even among the overlords. Even in his wounded and weakened state, it was frankly impossible for the Stalker Queen to deplete his life force quickly enough. Her magic was first class when it came to ensnaring and weakening her opponents, but she lacked the pure destructive might necessary to quickly finish off the Overlord of the Flaming Legion.
Portitor interdum dictum eget lacus, urcivarius notoc penetabus, et magnus disparturient mantis, mores urna sepinaliquam.
Nagnamor's crimson flames spewed out of his neck and skull, breaking through Leosolra's brood. They rose high into the air, forming an extremely ominous pillar of radiant fire that seemed to extend past the clouds.
Necet plesserat blandit! Nagnamor utricia presentum!
Hey, no fair!
Exclaimed Leosolra in a frustrated panic.
I'm not, like, done yet!
Yeah, well, like, fuck you!
He yelled back in a mocking tone, then uttered the word of power to finish off his incantation.
Armageddon!
In the next instant, Nagnamor self-destructed, releasing a wave of unimaginable, blinding heat. Everything within 100 meters of the Overlord, Leosolra included, melted into glass. A half-kilometer radius beyond that became a black desert of ash. The rest of the city, as well as parts of the rainy woodlands, were all set ablaze by an unquenchable inferno that threatened to envelop the entire forest. What clouds remained overhead were now completely gone, allowing the afternoon sun to shine down onto the newly created wasteland unabated. This was the power of Armageddon, one of the four great apocalypse magics. Much like the Ice Age unleashed by Leosolra on the town of Bootlick, it was a spell that only an overlord could use. It was their final trump card and the biggest threat they posed to civilizations caught in their wake. Among the four, Armageddon was the most outwardly devastating. It would have engulfed the entire city and then some instead of only half if the fight hadn't severely depleted Nagnamor's energy. It was still more than enough. Not only had Armageddon annihilated the other overlord in a flash, but it also put an abrupt end to the battle for New Whitehall, which, much like the duel between Leosolra and Nagnamor, ended without a definite winner. Looking at the heavy losses incurred on both sides, as well as the state of what was left of the city, even calling it a draw would be incredibly optimistic. On that day, both the Republic and the Empire had lost magnificently. And yet, it still wasn't over. Part 5. A patch of ash within the newly created black desert suddenly began moving and shifting. A large slab of superheated stone that survived the Armageddon spell steadily rose to the sound of Korra's grunting. With a final yell, she threw off the thick, flat rock that was easily 4 times larger than her, allowing the other survivors to breathe once more. The scalding, ash-filled air was far from lung-friendly, however, making them choke and cough uncontrollably. One of the druids in the unit somehow managed to cast a soothing rain spell, conjuring a small, gray cloud immediately overhead. The curative rainwater pouring down from it not only helped restore everyone's HP, but also purified and cooled the air to make it more breathable.
Everyone alive!
Yelled Kira while looking around.
I think we lost the 2 time in short ears.
Oi! I'm not dead yet, Holt.
Just my luck.
Arms, is Mr. S alive?
She turned towards the fiend.
Yeah. The boss is still around.
Do a handstand to prove it.
Oh, for the love of...
Korra did a perfect 10-point handstand using only her frontal pair of arms.
There. Satisfied?
Yes, thank you. What about the VIP and wounded?
VIP safe and sound, ma'am.
Some of the magic users passed out, but they'll pull through.
As the reports rapidly came in, it quickly became apparent that everyone was present and accounted for, even if not entirely fit for duty. Once the group's immediate concerns for their comrades' well-being were taken care of, they finally began to take in the devastation around them. The desolate, lifeless scenery was so silent that even their own uneven breathing sounded unnaturally loud and grating. Kira rose to her feet and looked towards the center of all this destruction. The ground in a large radius around Nagnamor's last location had turned to glass. Like a muddled diamond, it glistened and sparkled in the sunlight. Its impure nature and rough, uneven texture gave it an eerie, foreboding shine. The others followed the redhead's example and stared mutely at the glass field as the reality of their situation sunk in.
That's...
One of them spoke, his voice shaking.
Isn't that where...
Yeah, confirmed Mikey. If the deck hadn't told us to relocate, we'd have been right in the middle of that.
It was an undeniable fact that the catgirl's decision had saved them. They'd have still been caught up in the blast if the Decanus hadn't demanded that everyone seek shelter inside another basement the instant she heard that chanting start. It was no easy task getting underground and establishing a bunch of magical barriers in a matter of seconds, but they somehow pulled it off. If either the call to retreat or its execution had been any slower, they wouldn't have gotten off as easy as they had. Not that things were fine and dandy. The unit was covered in soot, mentally and physically exhausted, disoriented, and disheartened. It was unclear whether what they had been through over the last 10 to 15 minutes was lucky or unlucky, but given that they were all still around to debate the point implied the former. No, thinking about it from start to finish, their continued survival was more than a matter of luck. It was a miracle made possible through the effort and intuition of Decanus Kira Morgana. The Beastkin's unerring judgments had saved their lives many times, but this felt like providence. Looking upon the redhead's silent figure and sorrowful expression as she stared across the ruined landscape was a beautiful yet solemn sight, made all the more poignant by the soft pitter-patter of summoned rain. It was an ephemeral scene every artist worth their paintbrush would strive to immortalize. There were no such individuals around, of course. Kira's troops could only empathize with the redhead's grief at all the lives she had failed to save. In actuality, the girl-shaped monster wasn't mourning a bunch of faceless meals on legs, but the loss of Hilda's equipment. Boxy planned to sneak it out of that basement once the overlords were gone, but couldn't do so when the place was covered in glass. Furthermore, it wasn't something as unreliable as intuition that told the shapeshifter what Nagnamor's spell was going to do. It recognized some of the words in the chant thanks to Ambrosia's ongoing language lessons. Hearing the Overlord proclaim something about rendering the air aflame, it immediately ran underground and used its unwitting subordinates to fortify its position. Much as Boxy guessed from the chant, Nagnamore's spell had literally ignited the air around him. Thus, relatively little of Armageddon's heat seeped into the ground, allowing Kira and her unit to emerge from their hidey hole largely unscathed. However, it soon became clear that they were far from the only survivors. Hundreds of troops from both sides began slowly emerging from the ashes. This vaguely bowl-shaped black desert, coupled with the unbroken sunlight from above, made each and every survivor stand out like a sore thumb, even to the untrained eye. In fact, one of them raised a lot of dust as he made a beeline for Kira's unit, and judging from his armor's colors, he wasn't an ally. He was no pushover either, if his running speed was any indication. A quick scan with Eagle Eye told the red-headed ranger exactly who this madman was.
"We have incoming VIP!"
she shouted.
"Look alive, people! The war isn't over quite yet. Syme, how's the comm crystal?"
"Utterly busted, ma'am."
The elven warrior held up a shattered piece of crystal to illustrate his point.
"Damn! All right, take half the unit and get the injured out of here, VIP included. The rest of us will provide cover. And Syme, do not turn back, no matter what. You hear me, Legionnaire?"
"Loud and clear, ma'am. You heard the deck, lads and ladies. Start moving those legs if you don't want to lose your heads."
The man quickly picked out a dozen or so troops and began retreating as ordered. Neither he nor those with him felt right leaving the Decanus behind again, but they no longer had room to complain. If their goddess of victory told them to do something, then they just had to go and do it.
"Arms, you're up at the very front. He seems to be a melee combatant, so make sure you body block him and hold him down."
"Whatever you say, boss lady,"
replied Cora while banging her fists together.
"The rest of you wait until Arms has immobilized the target and then blast it with all you got. I don't care if you wipe her out, too. That goes for Miss Snack as well. Don't pull any punches and really pour it on."
"With great pleasure,"
Zira smirked.
"Oi! At least try not to hit me,"
the fiend complained and was summarily ignored.
"Keep in mind,"
Kira continued, rallying her troops,
"just because we're covering the others doesn't mean we're throwing our lives away. We're not just going to slow down that son of a bitch. We're going to annihilate him. We set out an hour ago to ensnare and kill a VIP, and that's exactly what we're gonna do. So steal your guts and tighten your buttholes, because it's gonna be a bumpy ride."
"Hoorah!"
The group that stayed behind to block the incoming threat consisted of 15 bodies. One Beastkin Ranger, two demonic familiars, one golem paladin, a human rogue, two priests, a druid, a cryomancer, a witch, three wizards, and two warriors. They quickly formed ranks to prepare for the incoming threat. A few of them realized the enemy could just skirt around them and head straight for the vulnerable VIP, but these concerns were discarded when the incoming threat stubbornly stayed his course even after they got into formation.
"Prepare barrage!"
At Kira's command, those in the unit capable of ranged attacks began pre-chanting spells and readying ranged weapons. After several tense seconds, the enemy entered their effective range.
"Loose!
Ice spike!
Fireball!
Fire blast!
Wind cutter!
Frostbolt!
Reality slash!"
A plethora of magic projectiles of various elemental alignments flew out, aimed squarely at the charging knight's path. The man brilliantly sidestepped them all, slipping through the gaps between them with superhuman reflexes. He then leapt through the air in a grand arc, swinging his two-handed warhammer down right onto Cora.
"Draw!"
Rather than take it head-on, the fiend activated a defensive martial art. It caused her towering body to abruptly slide backwards across the ashen ground without breaking her stance. With his target no longer where it was supposed to be, the enemy's heavy blow struck nothing but scorched earth.
"Straight!"
Activating the second part of the martial art, Cora's body flew forward with the same dizzying speed, allowing her to deliver a full-powered double right-handed straight punch. One fist connected with the man's shoulder plate, while the other was a clean shot to his forehead. The heavy dual blow forced the man back, causing his feet to drag along the loose ashes for a few meters. His helmet was blown off by the impact, landing somewhere behind him with a soft thud.
Well, well, well,
said Cora with a pleasantly surprised tone.
Fancy meeting you here!
Indeed, the man who had just eaten one of her double deluxe knuckle sandwiches was someone she had met before. He had a full head of blonde, unreasonably spiky hair. His face showed him as only 17 or 18 years old. His attractive facial features and sky blue eyes were marred with an expression that screamed of cold, seething hatred that sent chills down one's spine. His blue-tinged and well-worn armor looked to be thicker on his left side, especially the shoulder, upper arm, and left shin guard. In his hands was a pitch-black warhammer with a shimmering blood-red gem embedded in its head that gave off an ominous feeling.
I heard you bit the big one, Blondie,
Cora taunted him.
But I'm glad your bitch of a goddess cheated and brought you back. Now I get to skull-fuck you personally.
The human was Bernard Samson, hero of the hammer and herald of Teresa, the goddess of truth and justice.
So, it really is you,
he muttered, his expression unflinching.
I thought I was just seeing things, but looks like the old man was right after all.
There was no way he'd forget the damnable demon. Both of them had been right there at Ground Zero when Monotol was erased from the face of the planet. Any doubts Bernard might have had about the Republic's involvement in the Calamity disappeared when he saw that evil fiend allied with them. Now certain in his purpose more than ever, he dashed forward while swinging his ominous weapon in a wide horizontal arc. Cora successfully blocked it with the armored gauntlets on both her left forearms. Her right arms were already raised in preparation for a vicious counterattack that never came. Rather than fight back, she buckled over and stumbled backwards with a high-pitched scream of pain. This development caught Boxy by surprise. That fiend just screamed and doubled over in pain. The same demon that barely even uttered a grunt as she had limbs torn off, her face chewed off, and her body exploded time and time again. Her reaction was not just unusual, but downright unnatural. Indeed, looking at the arms that took the brunt of that attack, it was immediately evident something strange was going on. Both the flesh and metal on her forearms turned a lifeless brown color and began crumbling and falling away as if they were clumps of dried-up dirt.
Is that a demon, Bane?
Asked Zira through the telepathic link.
Yeah! That bitch got himself a Demon Bane weapon,
confirmed Cora.
A really powerful one, too. Boss, this is bad.
Bad was putting it mildly. Demon Bane weapons were, as their name suggested, implements created for the sole purpose of slaying demonic entities. Not only did they inflict considerable harm to a demon's physical form, but some of them even had the power to permanently damage or destroy the malicious entity that dwelled within. Needless to say, Boxy couldn't allow this to happen. Any warlock who failed to safeguard their soul-bound familiar's immortal soul would have their life instantly severed as per the summoning contract. Some extremely horrible things would then happen to the mortal soul that were arguably worse than oblivion. It was not a fate that Boxy wanted to tempt, so it instantly removed that possibility from the field. Your familiar has been dismissed. The spark of life in Cora's eyes disappeared abruptly. Her large body keeled over and fell to the ground like a bag of eggplants, though not before she flipped Bernard off with her remaining two hands.
She ran away.
The hero clicked his tongue in disappointment.
No matter. I'll make them all pay eventually.
Loose!
The next salvo of ranged attacks bombarded the human, but he evaded the worst of it by circling them around to his left. Kalira managed to nail him with her Ebonfire spell, but the black flames that enveloped his body were sucked away by his weapon before they could do serious harm. Zira's pet Molten Guardian ran out to challenge him, but the fiery warhound was swatted away in a single blow as if it were a harmless pup. It would appear that any magic that was even of vaguely demonic origin was useless against the hero. which included both the female warlock's prided ruin spells as well as the succubus's blazing minion. The former was a school of magic said to have originated in the beyond, while the latter was created through a demon's power, so neither of them could be used against the demon bane wielder.
The pyromancer, huh?
Feeling the response from his own weapon after taking out the molten guardian, Bernard immediately set his sights on the succubus in disguise. Sensing that the jig was up, Zira undid her disguise, unfurled her wings, and took to the air, eliminating the chance of being struck by that damnable weapon. She wasn't sturdy like Cora, so there was a good chance a solid hit might wipe her out completely. However, the hero would not let her escape so easily.
Judgment from above!
Bernard unleashed the skill given to him by virtue of being Teresa's chosen, causing a column of blinding white light to fall on top of the succubus. The skill relied heavily on the user's perceptions and preconceptions, since it would only display its full power against who the hero of the hammer judged to be evil. The youth's hatred for demonkind was quite intense, but not too far from the norm. 100 out of 100 people would agree that every creature that hailed from the beyond was inherently twisted and irredeemably wicked. In other words, the succubus would have been instantly wiped out regardless of the hero's circumstances, and this was precisely what happened. Her immortal soul was spared, but her physical form had evaporated without a trace. The young lad's twisted worldview came into play in regard to the troops that caught up in the divine blast by being directly underneath the primary target. In some ways, Bernard thought of the elves and the Republic as even worse than the demons themselves. The latter may have been born evil, but the former willingly employed those corrupting influences as weapons of mass destruction that wiped out entire cities in the blink of an eye. It was a crime not only against humanity, but against the world at large, and Bernard would be judge, jury, and executioner to their entire nation. He would do whatever was necessary if it meant that nobody would ever have to suffer as he had. Thus, when the dust settled, the elven troop were horrified to see that 4 of their numbers had turned into statues made of salt.
Halt!
Muttered Mikey in disbelief.
Halt! Halt!
He cried out in despair, but the elven priest that had saved his life several times earlier that day was already dead. His only reply to the 2-timing short ears was to fall over and crumble into a man-shaped pile of salt.
You monster!
Bellowed the distraught rogue.
You'll pay for that!
Mikey, don't!
Disregarding Kira's words, the hot-blooded adventurer rushed forward to challenge the hero in close quarters. Bernard stared him down, instantly condemned him as a traitorous piece of garbage, and prepared to smash him into a pulp. Before Mikey's rash actions got him killed, however, Kira put an arrow through his foot and pinned him to the ground with excessive force. As the hapless rogue howled in pain, anger, and sorrow, the cat girl tossed a trio of purple beads at the human. Wary of those odd projectiles, Bernard took a few steps back. The alchemically made smoke bombs cracked open on the ground in front of him, releasing a puff of thick, purple gas that he assumed had poisonous properties. Using the miasma as cover, one of the warriors in the group pulled the human's foot out of the ground and roughly carried him away from the threat.
No!
However, the hero dashed through the smoke and swung his weapon towards the elf's unprotected back. The sudden attack nailed the warrior in the shoulder, sending both him and the rogue tumbling to the side like a pair of rag dolls.
Quick strike!
In the next instant, the hero slammed his black hammer into the ground, causing a small wave of dust to travel towards the elven ranks. The group's druid stabbed his staff into the ground and used a strengthen soil spell in an attempt to counter and defuse the incoming martial art. Unfortunately, the tortured environment refused to respond to his natural magic, and the quake strike reached his feet unabated. What followed was a violent explosion of dust, ash, and what little dirt was left underneath all that devastation as the ground itself split open. It didn't do much in the way of damage, but it nevertheless scattered the Republic unit and obstructed their eyesight. The druid fell over on his knees and coughed violently before looking up to see Bernard bursting through the cloud of dust. The human swung his warhammer down on top of the elf. The druid closed his eyes, unable to stare his impending doom in the face. However, death would not claim him right that instant, as a white streak of gleaming mithril appeared between him and his assailant at the last possible moment. The impact of a cursed artifact-grade weapon colliding with a cursed artifact-grade shield rang out with a gong-like sound. The violent winds kicked up by the force of the blocked blow scattered all the ash and dust lingering in the air, revealing Fizzy had successfully stopped the hero in his tracks.
You're gonna have to try better than that, meatbag!
The golem put more strength behind her shield arm and forced the human backwards with a bashing motion.
Marcus, get off your ass and get Mikey and Yulian patched up!
Hearing Kira's voice injected life into the shaken-up druid.
Yes, ma'am!
He stuttered and rose to his feet.
Poe and Tullus, cover Fizzy. Box him in with your magic and don't let him run wild. The rest of you get your heads out of your asses and ready a secondary defensive line.
Fizzy and Bernard continued exchanging blows. Being paladins, both fighters invoked their respective Divine Wrath skills, which greatly increased their damage output for a short time. The golem also activated Parallel 1, which brought Plus into the mix. The entity did her best to disrupt the human through targeted applications of the Magnetize skill, coupled by repeated uses of the offensive Judgment spell. The charge pack strapped to the golem's back hummed along, zapping the hero with arcs of electricity every time he and Fizzy made contact. His armor protected him from the worst of it, but it still steadily sapped his HP regardless of whether he hit or was being hit. Even a block or parry resulted in more accumulated damage while two wizards and the Beastkin Ranger relentlessly targeted him with spells and arrows, severely limiting his ability to move around. Yet, the hero did not fall, nor did he slow down. For even though judgment from above could not be used more than once a day, the other skill granted by the goddess Teresa was something he could whip out as many times as he pleased.
Vengeance!
His whole body briefly enveloped by a bright glow, Bernard suddenly unleashed a massive, golf-like swing. A berserker-like technique, Vengeance rose in power directly proportional to the amount of damage he had taken over the last 10 seconds. And since that accursed golem's interference led to the hero losing about half of his HP in that short time frame, the power behind the skill-enhanced strike was several times stronger and faster than any of his previous attacks. Fizzy managed to catch it on her shield, but it still proved too much for her. While the cursed armament remained unscathed, the arm it was attached to crumpled under the ridiculous strain put on it. The golem was knocked through the air and crashed into the ash-covered ground with a heavy thud, kicking up a small cloud of debris. The remnants of the Republic unit watched in abject horror as their guardian angel's mangled left arm fell several meters away from her. Fizzy herself was still functioning, but her torso and legs were bent to the point where she struggled to stand up. In the next instant, there was a loud clang of metal scraping against metal, followed immediately by a certain message that was received by everyone within several kilometers of the scene. Clash of Fate has been invoked. The hero of the hammer will now face the hero of chaos on the field of battle. None may interfere in this righteous contest. May destiny smile upon the victor. Swerving their heads around, Republic troops could do little but stare with mouths agape as Kira stood before the hero. She had discarded her shortbow and was pointing her mithril rapier squarely at Bernard's throat. HP and MP have fully recovered. Skill, spell, and magic item cooldowns have been refreshed. Having miraculously regained his strength, the human hero rapidly rose to his feet with a truly bewildered look on his face, but assumed a fighting stance out of habit. His enemy was clearly no elf, nor did she seem particularly evil, but he would give her no quarter if she stood against him.
You favor your left when you dodge,
she said in a cold deadpan. Before anyone had a chance to grasp the sudden development, Kira slashed at the man's head. He dodged it, going down and towards his left exactly as she said, only to have the thin blade swerve at the last moment and slash him across the face. It almost looked like he cut himself on purpose. Ugh! He grunted, his eyes once again filling with anger. He then swung his prided hammer at the beastkin's center of mass.
Ugh! Your attacks are strong and fast, but way too direct.
She said this while effortlessly sidestepping his retaliatory strike. She ducked under the follow-up backhanded swing and then leaped over his shoulder charge with a somersault, landing squarely on top of his shoulders.
You're also pretty terrible at point-blank range.
She leapt off with a backflip, slashing him across the face yet again as she spun around.
Ah! Oh, you little—
His anger steadily rising. He kept swinging at her with all his might, despite being unable to land a single hit. Like a blade of grass swaying against the wind, the catgirl's body evaded his strikes before he even made them.
Also, you clearly don't know how to fight in that heavy armor. Not only is it messing up your swings, but you keep leaving your knees, armpits, and elbows exposed. You think you look cool or something? You're a joke!
Her blade unerringly ripped through his right arm's elbow as if to prove her point. The human yelled out in pain, stumbling back as blood gushed out of the wound.
You're no soldier. I'd call you a mindless brute, but that would be insulting to trolls everywhere.
She kicked some dust into his eyes and then tripped him up with a swift kick to the back of his knee, causing him to buckle over. She then stabbed him through the shoulder from above and behind. Having put her entire weight into the blow allowed her to pierce clean through metal and flesh alike in a single, magnificent thrust. He screamed in pain.
Vengeance!
Activating the same skill as before caused him to lash out with the same ferocity that sent Fizzy flying. It kicked up an impressive volume of dust, but ultimately hit only air since the catgirl had let go of her weapon and leapt over his head.
Blindly relying on status and skills to get you through your battles. It's a miracle you lasted this long. You'd never make it as an adventurer with that attitude.
With yet another scolding remark, Kira grabbed onto the handle of her blade and violently pulled it out of Bernard's shoulder by kicking off his back. He swung blindly as he turned around, only to have his opponent find a weak spot in his armor, puncturing through it and jabbing him in the thigh. Several quick exchanges later, the human was left kneeling on the ground, bleeding heavily from multiple wounds without being able to so much as bump into his opponent. It was clear by then that the redhead had used the knowledge gained from his fight with Fizzy to thoroughly analyze and then pick apart his amateurish fighting style. Though he may have been stronger than her, the difference in combat experience was staggering. Furthermore, she wasn't just beating him in a duel. She was humiliating him. She even somehow managed to goad him into using and missing his trump card, the deadly Judgment from Above skill. Nobody knew exactly how she had achieved this feat since they were momentarily blinded by the flashy magic, but nobody could deny the fact that she still stood after taking what seemed like a direct hit. At that point, all Bernard could do was glare defiantly at the catgirl, who was currently walking circles just outside his range and continuing her verbal onslaught.
I repeat, you're neither a soldier nor an adventurer. You barely even qualify as an adult. It really would be for the best if you apologized to all the warriors and paladins of the world for your shameful performance and became a farmer instead. That way, the only thing in danger of suffering your incompetence would be your cabbages. But you won't do that. Because underneath that thin veneer of a hero lies nothing more than a crying toddler throwing a tantrum over things he can't change.
Shut up! The fuck do you know?
Oh, but I know everything,
she said in a low voice.
I know you died at Monatal.
The man's eyes grew to the size of dinner plates. Underwood had given Kira all of the intelligence they had on the enemy VIPs, so it was only natural she knew about that, even if members of her squad didn't.
I know Edward told you the Republic was responsible for that calamity. But guess what? He lied. And you fell for it. That's so pathetic I can't even laugh at you.
No, that's not true. Alan's the one who gave me purpose. He showed me. Proved to me that—
He knows exactly who killed your friends and family, you know.
What?
Ah, but he hasn't told you, has he? Of course he didn't. He knew you wouldn't have become such a convenient tool for him to use if you had a clear target in mind. That's why he pinned the blame on the Republic as a whole. Face it, Blondie. To him, you're just another weapon to aim at his enemies. Just a tool to be used and discarded.
No. No! You're a lying, conniving twig lover. You're just saying those things to mess with me.
Am I? If you truly think my words are false, then why do you waver so? Go on, then. Deny them. Look me in the eye and tell me you actually believe in your own cause, you selfish prat.
You don't. The goddess, she has...
The gods have nothing to do with this,
countered the clearly irate cat girl.
Their asses aren't on the line down here. They don't have to resort to eating rats and leaves just to survive another day. It's not by their hand that this pointless war started. Fuck! If they wanted to, they could have easily put an end to all of this in an instant. But they'd much rather sit back and watch us die for their amusement. Like we're nothing more than brainless puppets dancing to their tune. None of those worthless pieces of shit have any place on the battlefield. And you fucking know it!
The cat girl reined in her blasphemous tirade. It wasn't intentional, but Boxy's true feelings regarding the whole hero business had slipped out. Well, neither the monster nor its alter ego could hardly be blamed for losing their cool, all things considered. Indeed, this whole performance was nothing more than an excuse for the shapeshifter to vent its frustrations. Even psychotic murder boxes needed to blow off some steam every now and then. Besides, this was the best way it could think of to stick it to that bitch Teresa for meddling in its life. Though, even without all that, this pathetic punk already committed an offense worthy of a dozen painful deaths in Boxy's eyes.
Ultimately, your lack of conviction is none of my concern.
It continued as Kira.
I don't care what brought you here. I don't give a crap what possessed you to attack me and my unit. If you had just turned away instead of charging at us like the retarded piece of shit you are, then it wouldn't have come to this. But now? Now it's too late. Your sins are too heavy.
The cat girl abruptly stopped and faced the utterly perplexed hero in a way that only he could see her expression. She bore an adorable smile that seemed to contain all the world's innocence, all dipped in an extra layer of sweetness. That jarringly adorable face then delivered a message only he could hear.
Nobody breaks my shinies.
With those parting words, the mithril rapier sank into the shaken and confused human's eye socket. It impaled his head so thoroughly that the weapon's bloodied tip poked out the back of his skull. The cat girl viciously kicked the former hero in the chest, pulling her beautifully deadly blade out of his face in a single motion while his body fell over and collapsed onto the ashen ground. Clash of fate has been resolved. The hero of chaos has defeated the hero of the hammer with a flawless victory. A faint, blue mist rose out of Bernard's corpse, enveloping around Kira and seeping into her very being. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Hero killer. Feat of strength performed. You have unlocked a new perk. Usurper of justice. Proficiency level increased. Vengeance is now level 1. This unexpected boon demanded closer inspection. But Boxy still had witnesses to deal with. When it turned around, however, what awaited it wasn't the surprised, perplexed, or otherwise awe-filled faces of Kira's subordinates. Similarly, the charred wasteland left in Punchy's wake wasn't anywhere in sight. Instead, the creature saw an endless sky filled with naught but fluffy white clouds, all of it dyed golden by a soothing glow from a sun that wasn't there. There was no trace of anything resembling solid ground as far as the eye could see. Even the stuff the shapeshifter stood on looked like little more than solidified mist. The presumed owner of this wondrous space loomed over the befuddled creature. The 50-meter-tall woman had flowing gold locks, bright blue eyes, flawless fair skin, and a stunning, well-proportioned figure. She was draped in a pure white garment halfway between a robe and a dress that left